Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
An Erio's original.
Each week, we decide who's to blame for a historical tragedy. And each week, you tell us if we got it right. My name is Rebecca Delgado-Smith, and this is The Aftermath.
Hey everyone, it's Rebecca. Welcome to The Aftermath, where you tell us if we sent the right person or thing to the alarmist jail. With us today are producer Amanda Lund and fact-checker Chris Smith.
Here to serve.
Hey guys, me too.
And today we're going to be talking with a Black Sox scandal expert to see if he agrees with our verdict. He's MLB historian and author of The Betrayal, The 1919 World Series, and The Birth of Modern Baseball, Charles Fountain.
I can't wait to hear what he has to say.
What do you think, Chris?
The guy? About his name?
Yeah. Do you like his name and are you excited to speak to him?
I always like to hear anybody who knows a lot about baseball. I like to hear them talk.
Me too. I love talking about baseball.
I've had a crush on every single one of our guest experts so far.
I got to tell you, the guy who talked about Chernobyl was, I would have listened to that.
Yeah.
That deep, resonant, intelligent, well-spoken voice for at least another 20 minutes.
He also had a great sense of humor.
He did. And he was a legitimate hero.
Yes.
I went down kind of a dark web Google search about him.
Was it the dark web or was it Google?
No, it was the light web. It was just normal Google. But I was like, I actually got really flustered after the fact. I was like, I knew that he worked at the hospital, but he was truly a hero.
Yes. I mean, it's kind of a good thing that we all didn't realize we were talking to not an American hero, an international hero.
Yeah, it was really cool to actually meet, you know, because especially with the proliferation of Marvel and the Marvel universe expanding.
Yes.
And when fake heroes are so popular, it's nice to actually hear the voice of a real hero.
Yeah.
Understated, cool as a cucumber. And with the real life experience to lead us to, a greater future, I guess.
Well, I mean, let's hear what this MLB hero has to say. Hi, Charles.
Hi, how are you, Rebecca?
Hi, I'm good. Thank you so much for joining us. We have, laid out who we think is to blame for the Black Sox scandal. But I just wanted to hear your expert opinion. Who do you think is to blame for the Black Sox scandal?
Well, I'll tell you what I know, which is that, nobody really knows what happened in that period of time. And there's blame enough to go around. If I had to lay the blame on anyone's feet, I would lay it at the administration of Major League Baseball at that time. They had ignored rumors and accusations and complaints that ball games had been fixed for the better part of 20 years. And, you know, it was in their best interest to ignore those, because while rumors of impropriety weren't going to be very good for baseball, proving those rumors to be true would have been very bad for baseball. So they right. stuck their head in the sand. And this could have been, you know, instead of a, you know, the major conflagration that it was, it could have been a small brush fire if they had seized any one of about a dozen opportunities that they had in the 20 years leading up to the 1919 World Series.
Well, we came up with a very similar theory as well. We thought Comiskey and the owners and the all of, you know, MLB was kind of to blame. What can you tell us about the reserve clause? Because we felt like that had a big impact.
Yeah, I mean, the reserve clause was the economic foundation of Major League Baseball from the 1880s, when it was agreed to by the teams in the National League and the American Association, before there even was what we know today as organized baseball. It was the foundation, the economic foundation, from the 1880s through the 1970s, when it was finally overturned and players could, you know, shop their services to the highest bidder. I think that, you know, certainly that had something to do with it. Wages were depressed. The White Sox salaries were no better nor worse than anybody else's in Major League Baseball. But they were depressed across Major League Baseball, that owners paid the players what they wanted to because they could afford to. And the players had no option. They could not go to any other team. They could not go to any other league. They could not go to any other, you know, any place and get paid for playing baseball. So they signed their contracts and they groused and complained about it. And they looked to make whatever extra money they could. And this was one of the ways that some of the more nefarious players over the years found a way to make a couple of extra bucks. And we're really talking about a couple of extra bucks. We're talking, you know, on these fixed games that I was talking about leading up to 1919, players making, you know, $100, $200, $500, $50 for these one-off, you know, games. And, you know, that they were tradesmen moonlighting, trying to make a little extra.
Right. So there was just this culture of gambling that was prevalent. Would you say a lot of the players participated in it?
I don't know to what degree the players participated in gambling. That players very definitely wagered, particularly in a big series. They would wager against each other, generally to win. In other words, I'll bet you $10 our team's going to beat your team. That was very commonplace. So too was the betting in the stands at major league ballparks amongst the gamblers. And so too were these ubiquitous sort of lotteries, run pools, where you'd pay a dime at the corner candy store or corner cigar store, and depending on the number of runs that you had in the pool and the number of runs that were scored in that given week, you had a chance to, you know, win some money. So there was an awful lot of that kind of gambling going on in baseball at the time. And, you know, it would not have been at all uncommon to, you know, discuss what the odds were in a game, who was betting on who. And in at least one instance, the manager of the Giants, John McGraw, called his players out for not wanting to bet on their team in the World Series against the Philadelphia Athletics in the 1905, 1906, somewhere in that window.
Wow. So it wasn't the first time that players had even a bet on the World Series.
No, players would bet. Generally, they would, you know, bet on their team to win with players on the other team. There were instances where players would, you know, bet against their team because they had the belief that, you know, their team was going to, the fix was in on that particular game. Those are, they're, they're believable in the sense that people talked about them, but we don't have any instance. We can't, for example, point to this July 14th game in 1913 between two teams and say this was fixed. You know, there have been allegations and such, and I think it's reasonable to believe that there were fixed baseball games in that 20-year window. But we can't point to any single game and say this one was fixed, including, by the way, the games in the 1919 World Series that, you know, it's unclear whether or not the White Sox lost those games because they were trying to lose them or whether they lost them because Cincinnati was a better team on those days.
The evidence was just not there. Now, we didn't blame the players. We thought it was something that was bigger than just the players. But, you know, I think there were a few players who kind of did their involvement in it was maybe a little unsportsmanlike, to say the least. Can you talk about these players?
The players do not get a pass on this, that the players that were indicted, tried, and ultimately thrown out of baseball by Judge Landis were guilty of every one of the crimes for which they were thrown out of baseball. They accepted the gambler's money. They were aware of a conspiracy to throw the series, and they did not report that conspiracy to throw the series, even the players that did not take money, Buck Weaver, for example. So all of the players are, you know, guilty of that complicity of being involved in that conspiracy. And they're something of a sympathetic figure historically because they were underpaid. This was a fairly common conversation that games were fixed. So the players were probably doing something that they figured other people had done. To the degree that other people had done it, they may not have been sure, but they were convinced that other people had done it. You know, the players don't get a pass on this. Some are more sympathetic than others, but that's generally after the fact they get a little more sympathy. But they were all very much guilty of what they were thrown out of baseball for.
Yeah, for us, Chick Gandiel seemed, as the person who kind of was the ringleader, seemed a little bit more guilty than some of the other more sympathetic players, like, you know, the Eddie Seacott, which I think also he's an interesting one because it seemed like he was very guilty, but still he was very sympathetic.
Seacott had the greatest remorse, I think, of any of the players, that I think he was also most acutely aware of the sense of betrayal that those players had inflicted upon the game and particularly the game's fans. And I think in that way, it makes him one of the most interesting figures in this whole thing. Chick Gandiel is a thoroughly unlikable individual, that he was unlikable as a player well before this. He was an unlikable when all of the news stories on this sort of started to break. He was unlikable after that. And in his one attempt to justify this and talk about this in a Sports Illustrated article in the 1950s, he comes off as a very unlikable figure. So he was very much at the center of it. So he's easy to paint as the principal villain in that regard. And his personality is also one that makes it easy for, you know, him to be the guy that everybody loves to pin it on.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the Buck Weavers and the Joe Jacksons, they felt very sympathetic to us.
Buck Weaver was not guilty of anything other than knowing what was going on and refusing to rat out his fellow players. That's pretty clear from all of the evidence. Joe Jackson was guilty of accepting the money. He was guilty of not reporting the action, even though there's a report that he tried to after the series was over. He did nothing to lose the World Series. I mean, his statistics were, they were a World Series standard for years thereafter in terms of batting average and total number of hits and so forth. His critics will point out that he got none of those hits at critical moments. But that's a little you know, specious an argument, I think, that baseball players can't turn it on, can't get hit at this at-bat because they want to, and not at the next at-bat because they don't. There's no player who ever lived with that skill.
So, and just one final question. I just wanted to get your thoughts on the Astros scandal at the moment.
That, I think, is the, you know, at the moment, the, you know, scandal of the 21st century to rival the Black Sox scandal of the 20th century. It would seem as though for a variety of reasons, the players are going to come away from this relatively unscathed. Their reputations are going to be damaged, but their careers are not going to be harmed. I think if you turn back the clock on this scandal 100 years, you would find the commissioner of baseball probably suspending a whole lot of players on the Houston Astros for a long time or forever. And if you fast forwarded the clock on what the Black Sox did in 1919 to 2020, that the strength of the Major League Baseball Players Association and the fact that these players would have very good lawyers from a very early hour would probably mean that the players would come away with their reputations damaged, but their careers would continue.
Wow. That's, I mean, yes, that's fascinating. And finally, before you go, please tell us where we can find you and where we can purchase your book, The Betrayal, the 1919 World Series and the Birth of Modern Baseball.
You can buy it on Amazon. You can buy it on any online bookseller. And you can buy it through my website at charlesfountain.com.
Well, thank you so much, Charles. It's been wonderful talking to you. And I'm glad that we ultimately agreed.
Well, that I look forward to hearing the show in its final form.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
I found that talking to Charles was absolutely interesting.
Okay. Are we pretending that we listened to, because we didn't hear that conversation, me and Amanda. Yeah. It was on headphones, so we couldn't hear it.
Yeah.
But we're going to listen to it later.
We're pretending.
And like I've said before, this doesn't get edited.
I know. No, but that's what I'm saying. Like,
Chris is really forcing the edit.
I know. I don't want you to edit this because I want people to know that I did not hear that conversation.
Chris, it's podcast magic.
No, it's not. It's
oh boy.
People want to see how the magic is made.
You know, I think I will edit this episode. I think I'll edit you out.
Well deserved. He really put the blame on the league and the administration, which is similar to, because at the time, you know, the owners were kind of the administration. They were all, they were essentially running.
They ran the show.
So I feel good. Yeah. It's not really changing my verdict per se. I thought what was fascinating about what he said was how he connected the Astros scandal. He said that if we reversed and rewinded to 1919, this would be the same. The size of the scandal of 1919 would be the same as the Astros.
Oh, really?
Oh,
yes.
I would have thought it would be way bigger. Back
no.
in 1919.
Well, he thinks that if the Astros scandal happened in 1919, all of these players would have been
booted
from the league, because the strength of the MLB players, they wouldn't have had the good lawyers that they have and the power that they have.
Gotcha.
You know, right now
they're protected by the union,
but back then they would have just been
by.
And he thinks had this Black Sox scandal happened in 2020 or 2019, when the Astros,
nobody would have been kicked out. Strength of a union.
Interesting.
So
very interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
That kind of puts it into perspective a little bit.
Definitely.
Yeah, it kind of blows your mind.
Well, now that that's figured out, I think that we should transition and talk about some of our listener comments and emails.
Okay. And not just emails, you guys, because we got a voicemail.
Woo! Play it, Amanda.
Okay. So I'm so excited. And just for everyone, when you're going to hear this, you're going to be so jealous it's not your voice. So if you want to leave us a voicemail, call 844-370-8643. That's 844-370-8643. Okay, let's hear this voicemail.
This is a message for the alarmist. The name's Pablo. I'm from the United Kingdom. Just in regards to the whole Megxit aspect, there was a mention of Danny Baker, who worked for the BBC at the time, and his post that he put on Twitter, which was a very misjudged post on his part, which was essentially a couple taking a monkey out of hospital. Although, to be fair to him, his comment was specific in regards to the royal family. His point was that, you know, here's another child of the royal family and we don't care. He did not specifically intend a racial angle to it, and he was very apologetic once that was pointed out to him, although, as I say, admittedly, it was a stupid thing to do on his part and it was very ignorant to do that. But to his credit, I will say he is kind of a stalwart of the BBC and is in no way a racist. And I think this taken out of isolation makes him seem a lot worse than he was. But on the whole Megxit angle, the one person that you did not mention in any way, shape or form who is a massive contributor to the problem is a certain Mr. Piers Morgan, a person who is a member of my country and who I would very much wish was not. I know you had him for a little bit, but you sent him over here back with his tail between his legs. If you want to take him back, that'd be great. Otherwise, that's it. Love the show. Please do more. Love it, love it. At Pablo Bonzo on Twitter. Toodles!
He even got a plug in there.
I know, I love that.
I loved him! I mean, first of all, we got a Brit! We got a Brit calling in.
Amazing.
Long-distance phone call. It's more expensive.
I mean, it is a toll-free
number. It's a toll-free number,
that's
Chris.
Why.
Need I remind you?
Yes. Just,
yeah. Okay.
I don't know if that, if toll-free
we'll
is...
We'll see if it shows up on the bill.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's an interesting... Well, okay. So I think that what he's saying is that maybe that man's post was taken out of context, and context is important. So...
That's true. I think his beef a little bit was that it made him sound more racist than maybe he thought that he was. He did call him ignorant. I do agree. It was an ignorant thing to do. It was, you know, you're a member of the media, the BBC. It's an important organization. You have to be aware of what these what you're putting out there.
The other thing I thought was Piers Morgan, which we actually had in the original write up. We just forgot to sort of throw him in there. We ran out of time. But
right, that's Piers Morgan interesting.
I'm
glad he brought that up.
Yeah, me too. He's just like a troll, basically. He's just like any sort of like divisive cultural subject. He's just all over it. He's just all about sort of negative press and just. Infuriating the libs or whatever. So that guy sucks.
Yeah, and it sounds like he himself had a personal feud with the Meghan and Prince Harry situation. It seems like he was particularly aggressive toward the two of them.
You know what I loved about Pablo's voicemail is that
or Pablo?
Oh, I don't know. I'm assuming
it was Pablo.
Pablo?
You think it's Papo?
Yeah.
I think it was Pablo.
Okay,
but
fine.
I liked about his, just like British people have this way of speaking that they can be so, they sound so fair and balanced, don't they? He was levying judgment, you know, but wanted to be fair, but also condemned the action of the tweet, but wanted to be fair at the same time and sort of did somehow manage to convey that with the tone and sort of the words that he chose. So good on you,
yeah.
Pablo. Thank you.
He was very they're very, I wouldn't say politically correct, I guess charming in the way they speak, that they might be making fun of you, but you might not even notice. Is that what you're saying?
It wasn't really what I was saying, but...
another truth.
Another truth, totally.
Should we do one more quick email?
Okay, so I want to talk about this email we got from a listener named Stefan Ammons. I hope I'm saying that right. But he wrote in and he had a lot of nice things to say about the podcast. He's a big fan. But he also had something that really bothered him a little bit. I wouldn't say really bothered him, just kind of irked him. And he writes, I know that you all are not historians and I'm not one to consider myself sensitive, but so far there has been only one moment that really made me sad. And this happened so long ago, but like I said, I'm binge listening at the moment. Having heard a more serious description of the lady and the story behind the McDonald's coffee incident, I understood her to be a vital, hardworking, and active woman for her age. She'd been saving and was about to enjoy an active life of retirement near her family, which kind of all fell apart physically and financially after the incident. Someone, I don't think it was you specifically, assumed she was working so long into her years because she was poor. The words "not someone with means" and "poverty" were used. Even if she was poor, why would she be splurging on coffee from a fast food joint? People think people drink coffee just because, and some people work because they like their job. And I think that it was just a necessary and unrelated time to bring up money in class. I think that the event as something that could have happened to anyone. So not sure why this struck a chord with me. He goes on and he's still a big fan. He signed it with love.
Well, thanks for we appreciate that feedback.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, absolutely
fair. And totally. I don't know who said that. But could have been me. I don't think it was.
But whoever it was gets the big slap.
Well, we got to give ourselves the little slap.
Yeah, that's a little slap. Yeah, for sure. And you know, we want to make sure that everyone's thoughts and opinions are and feelings are heard. So thank you so much, Stefan or Stefan, unclear. But thank you so much for writing in. Now, I also want to give a shout out to a special listener who has been really vocal ever since the Henry VIII Anne Boleyn episode. Now, he believes that Henry VIII is to blame for every tragedy, and he's been making a point since that episode to plead his case. Now, these are some of his remarks regarding the Salem witch trials. His Pete Thomas says, And Puritanism was a splinter group of the Church of England, and therefore some of the blame could lie with Henry VIII.
Hmm.
So he linked the witch trials to Henry VIII.
Sure.
Interesting. Okay. Pete Thomas goes on, for the gender reveal episode, he says, divorcing one wife for having a girl and beheaded another who did the same, just saying, Henry VIII invented acting poorly from gender reveals. So
that is pretty good, actually. I got to tip my hat to him for that one. That one's solid.
This is so creative.
are we going to blame Henry VIII for gender reveals now?
Kind of want to.
Are you changing your verdict?
That one almost got me, but he goes on.
You know what? We should have a system where somebody in the alarmist jail can write a file for an appeal.
An appeal!
so they can write in and file for an appeal, and then we can relitigate the case.
Yes. That's amazing.
So he chimes in about the Home Alone tragedy. He says that not enough blaming of Henry VIII. His lavish holiday spending no doubt had a deep influence on both the parents and the wet bandits. So he links an article about Henry VIII, who spent almost his entire year's tax revenue celebrating Christmas in the first year of his reign. So that's pretty scandalous. And he also says, the Burr-Hamilton duel could be blamed on Henry VIII.
Okay. I'm about over this.
Let's hear.
He says, yes, of course I Googled Henry VIII duels, and yes, a man known for murdering his opponents and wives was also obsessed with jousting duels to prove his manhood.
Chris, stop fumbling over there.
I'm sorry.
I pick up all of that.
Oh, sorry.
You are, Chris is out of control today.
You're going to be sent to the alarmist jail. It's like he thinks it's an aftermath episode so he can act all wild.
Recording.
This is what you get when the fact checker's in aftermath.
I just want everyone to know
vacation
that
time.
He took his shoes off and he's laying down with his laptop on his stomach.
There isn't a lot of fact checking to do during the aftermath episode, so I'm kind of like chilling out. Leave me alone.
It's really crazy. So who do we think that this changes any of the verdicts?
No, but I love this listener. They're my new favorite listener, and I want them to keep going with this.
Yes.
So after every episode, please write in with how you think Henry VIII is responsible.
Pete Thomas for the win. So we've had a lot of really good input these past weeks, and I want to continue to encourage you guys to email us with all of your recommendations, especially in the international tragedy front. We do want to get multiple tragedies for every continent in the world. We had some listeners chime in about some Antarctica tragedies, which I loved. There was some Australian listeners who reached out, and the next episode that we're doing was actually inspired by a Japanese American listener who wrote in and had some thought, wanted us to cover the Hiroshima and Nagasaki bombings. So
we're gonna do it.
Yep, let's do it. I think that would be a very good alarmist episode.
Yeah, I think so too. And before we wrap up, I just want to say we've been getting some great ratings and reviews, and I want to let you guys know that you taking the time to rate and review helps the alarmist climb the charts. I don't know how, I don't know why, but that's what they tell me. So it really means a lot. We put so much work into these episodes. Rebecca does tons of research. We have an assistant, Malin.
Shout out to Malin.
She's helping us with these guest experts. So the way that you can pay us back, because we're now trying to give you two episodes a week, and that's instead of starting a Patreon or something. So we're really, this is us giving you tons of free content. And what you can do for us is to tell people about the podcast, to rate and review, and I will read some. 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Moses Dupree says, Rebecca needs to teach history. If she was my high school history teacher, I would have majored in history in college.
Aw, well, that actually makes me think the reason I got so interested in history was because of my high school history teacher. He taught history like it was Us Weekly. And that really got me invested in all of these different tragedies.
What was his name?
His name was Mr. Lutness. Shout out to Mr. Lutness at New World School of the Arts. So in a way, Moses, I am teaching history. And if you have any connection to high schools, please let these high school teachers share this podcast with their students.
That'd be great.
So thank you so much for all of your thoughts, and thank you so much to Charles Fountain. And you know what? Thank you, Amanda, and a little thank you to Chris.
As long as I'm not getting the little slap, that's fine.
Oh, you're definitely getting the little
slap. Maybe you're getting
today.
A little pinch.
So again, remember to tune in next week. We'll be talking about mad cow disease.
Powered by Acast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.